Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Well, I wanted to explain some changes in the format, but the devotees aren't here. I'll wait till everybody comes. So I'm going to start the class with a summary of what was going before. We're now in the second half of the book discussing what is actually taught us in the Bhagavatam. The first glimpse is given in terms of what are the interests of the speaker, Shukadev. And we read how he was an impersonalist but gave that up to study the Bhagavatam and became interested in pure devotional service. Then we looked at Vyasadeva, the original speaker, the description of his trance and how he saw the Supreme Lord with his energies. He saw the material energy diluting the jivas, and he saw devotional service of the Supreme Lord as the only way to counteract that dilemma. And he compiled the Bhagavatam to teach pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Now, starting with Anuchet 50. Okay, enough devotees here. I think I can give some explanation. We're going to try a different format for the class. One is, as I'm doing now, is to try to give some orientation, backing up and reviewing what's going on before we start the class. And before that, we'll have questions answered. So the new system is that don't present your questions during the class. I would suggest you have a notebook or some paper to write on. Make a note of your questions to yourself. And then we have set up a phone conference that's already working. And you should send your questions to that phone conference. If you don't know how to do that, Vishnukanta, Durvinipur can help you. If you don't have your own computer, we can arrange access. Just takes a few minutes to do this. If you have questions, you send it to the conference. And I will answer them the next morning in class, some of them, and others I will answer by responding on email, the ones that are not really to the point, I'll respond really briefly by email. All questions will be answered. Let's try that. It'll be more efficient. We'll squander less time during the class and we'll be able to stay in the class on focus, I think. That's a question. Yeah, go ahead. Send me a letter. No, okay.
Sometimes
there's
somebody asks questions, so, and during this, whole discussion that I...
Yeah, but I want to avoid that. Oh, yeah. It flowers up in a million directions, but I think that destroys the focus of the class.
But for example, if those questions are on the topic,
I know they're on the topic, they're on the topic more or less, but they tend to get off in directions. I want to try to keep the Hare Krishna. Okay. Maybe I'll give a brief... No, I'm afraid it'll get out of control. Let's just try it this way. Let's see. General discussions I think we should have outside the class. You can always approach me personally, or you can send your questions to the conference. But I think expanded discussions, we won't have them in the class itself. Okay? I'll make myself available if you want to discuss things further alone or in groups. but let's just try to keep the class focused. Let's try that. Okay, now we're going to have a barrage of questions.
You will check those questions every night before
I'll
you
check
the
them.
Next class.
I'll check them a few times every day.
So basically, the devotees don't have to worry that questions will be unanswered.
I might fall. There might be a case where I don't answer it the same day. The deadline for submitting questions is breakfast the next morning. You know, if you want it answered that day.
What if somehow I don't get the modern to me? Can I just give you I write down my question I gave you that day?
You can write it down. You can also come to me personally, and say it or whatever. Yeah. But this is the recommended procedure, is to send it by email.
In case it's sometimes technically it won't be.
What's the use of class?
We're going, well, let's see. I mean, that's... Okay, well, we won't be just reading it. If I can stay on focus, then maybe I can say some things.
No, but the questions are there, and they're answered.
They're answered. We're going to answer them the next morning.
Yeah.
It may take us half of the class to do that.
Okay.
And it may slow things down. It may take 3/4 of the class to answer yesterday's question.
Okay.
And I'll allow some further talk, but not too much. We can have response to the answer, but not we have to limit that. So in the long run, we may be proceeding slower through the sandarbhas because of adding this extra whole section of a class before we even start the new discussion. Two things I'm going to review. Well, first, we're going to deal with the previous day's questions, and second, I'm going to give an overview, review, or an orientation. So it may take up a lot of extra time, and it may, in the long run, slow us down. But that's not my concern. I don't care how long it takes to finish the sandarbhas, how slow we go. I just want to stay focused on what Jiva Goswami is talking about, even if we go slow. Yes?
Most times when we ask questions, the answer is there. And many questions, on the answer we ask, based on the answer we actually come to the point, it takes some question and answers in order to come to the action point.
I know, but that procedure just gums up the works. We spend the whole time answering questions that are all over the place. Some of them are to the point, some of them are way off, just some other topic. So it's not like you can't continue it. The next day, submit another question on top of that. The questions don't have to be only on exactly what was discussed the day before. What you should do, in a comm message, you have a subject line. In that subject line, you should indicate what anuccheda you're asking about. So it doesn't have to be this. Exactly the previous day's anuccheda. You can go back further, but you should identify which anuccheda and put your name, because you may be using somebody else's account. At least if you're using somebody else's account, put your name. And tell me which anuccheda. It can be any anuccheda that we've covered up to now. So you can ask further questions even later on. And other people all of this, questions and answers will be available for anybody on the conference to look at.
Suppose the answer for the subsequent question based on the first answer is given.
Yes.
And then you take at least 2-3 days for me to understand the answer for the long question.
Okay. But then you can understand it for the rest of your life. Let it take a few days rather than spend, a good percentage of the class sorting things out. Let's do the sorting out of misunderstandings and inquiries for further information and clarification. Let's try to do that. We're trying to do that out of the class. It may take longer in the long run, and I may have to spend a lot of time out of the class dealing with them, but that at least lets the class stay intensely focused on the text. And then maybe I'll be able to think of something more to say than just read what's here. But unfortunately, I don't have a lot of time day to day to spend preparing for the class. Therefore, I have to come and just impromptu read what's here and comment on it. I can't spend half the day figuring out what I'm going to say the next day. I don't have that time. Okay, now we're going to do that. I'm going to, first of all, well, we don't have questions from yesterday, but I was just starting to explain what's been going on in the previous underchains. So starting in underchain 50, first of all, he notes that what all six sandarbhas are going to do, the entire sandarbhas, their general purpose is to show how Bhagavatam explains the basic topics of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. So sambandha comes first. And the first element of sambandha is to identify what is the absolute truth, the supreme truth. Everything else will be in relationship to that truth, and the relationships will be part of the sambandha again. But the first thing to do is identify what is that absolute truth. So that's what we're doing now in the current end of chains. The words from the second verse of the Bhagavatam, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu, were analyzed. And we extracted from that the understanding that whatever this truth is, it can be understood, so it's worthwhile pursuing an attempt to understand it. And it's not just alone by itself. It exists with its qualities and other entities that expand from it and which have relationships with it. Vastu and Vastava. The Vastava is everything in connection with the Vastu. So this Vastu has a lot of features, a lot of dharmas, we say in Sanskrit. That was the most general idea of the absolute truth. Then the verse, Padanti yat tattva vidas tattvam yam gyanam advayam, helped to further clarify the definition of what is this absolute truth. It's gyanam advayam, which doesn't mean the impersonal idea of pure knowledge, which doesn't even allow there being a person who's doing the knowing. Let's say consciousness, pure consciousness. The Mayavadi idea of pure consciousness is there's nobody knowing it. There's no person. There's no object of knowledge, because those are specific dualities with qualities. The absolute truth has no qualities. Therefore, there's pure awareness, but no content of awareness, no subject of awareness, no process of awareness. But that's Mayavadi idea. That's a misunderstanding of what the Bhagavatam is saying when it talks about Advaya Jnana. Advaya Jnana means there's no absolute difference. It's not that there is absolute sameness, but there is no absolute difference between the Supreme and its energies. There is sameness, but there's also a difference. And now we're up to 53. We did 52. 52.2. Oh, we didn't start. We didn't finish 52. Okay. I think we read 52.2. We're on 52.3. Okay. Okay, I'll read it again. 52.2. Yata janma praviti kaschid griha guava ruda suryam vividushu katanchit gavaksha patitam suryam shukanam darshayatva kenachit upadishyate esha sa ityeta tat amsha jyoti samana karataya tan maha jyoti mandalam anusandiyatam ityartas tadvat jivasya tata tad amshatvam cha tad achintya shakti vishesha siddhatvenaiva paramatma sandarbhi Stapa Yishyamaha. Suppose someone who has been kept prisoner in his house since birth wants to know what the sun is. He manages to observe the sun's rays coming through the small holes in the closed window shutters and someone tells him, that is the Son. Behind this answer lies this instruction. From these small portions of light, which are one in substance with their source, you should be able to form some idea of the great fiery sphere of the sun. Okay, there's a mistake there. It's not that he manages to observe, but someone shows him. Someone comes and he doesn't even know, can't even be aware on his own of the sun rays coming through the window. Someone has to tell him. Behind this answer lies the instruction. From these small portions of light, which are one in substance with their source, you should be able to form some idea of the great fiery sphere of the sun. In the same way, the jiva is a portion of the supreme by virtue of the supreme's inconceivable special potencies. This we will prove later in the Paramatma Sandarbha. So this is something that could be doubted and needs to be proven, because it's not certain knowledge for everybody, that the jiva is substantially equal with the absolute truth. We can see that the jiva is limited. Everybody sees he can't do everything he wants to do. He has unfulfilled desires. So the jiva is not God, at least not currently. He's not acting like God. So to know that the jiva is a portion and not everything, that just takes some common sense. You have to ignore reality or deny it, that it's unreal. That reality, that what you experience isn't real. You have to deny your immediate experience to reject the idea that the jiva is finite. You have to, have a very complex philosophy that allows you to ignore what's obvious. It's obvious that the jiva is finite. What's not obvious is that he's a portion of the Supreme, that he's qualitatively equal with the Supreme. Not everything is qualitatively equal with the Supreme. This table is not Satchitananda. It's not conscious. Neither is it permanent. The chair can be burned or cut into pieces. You can't do that with a jiva soul. So not everything is absolutely, not everything is one qualitatively with the Supreme. The chair, the table, is not even qualitatively equal with the Supreme. So the fact that the jiva is Satchitananda, the same way that the Supreme is, that's a significant fact that's not obvious. Anuman, especially, logic is used for learning things that are not obvious but can be established, are knowable but are not obvious. So the fact of the jiva being qualitatively one with the Supreme is knowable, it's true, it's correct, it's true, and it can be understood, it can be proven. And there's a necessity to prove it because it's not obvious to everybody. Many people think that they're just a lump of flesh, that they're material. Paropi manute nartam. In general, conditioned souls think that they are something material. So this has to be established. It has to be proven. And the actual thorough proof will be given later in the Paramatma Sandarbha, which actually deals with the proper understanding of what is the jiva soul. If that is established, then it's very useful to understand your own spiritual nature. You are a jiva soul. You are qualitatively one with the Supreme. So therefore, by knowing yourself as spirit soul, that's a good beginning to understanding the absolute truth. You are a sample of the absolute truth. Scientists want to study some phenomenon that is beyond the capacity of studying all at once. Those who want to study the ocean water, they may have a laboratory set up to study it chemically, physically, in all different ways, but there's no way they can bring the whole ocean into their laboratory and measure and study all of it. They have to collect a sample in a bottle of a small part of the ocean. But doing that is still very useful. so many things. If you have the right instruments and the right methods, you can learn so many things about the ocean from a small sample. It is ocean, it's just not all of it. So the jiva is Brahman, but it's not all of it. Still, you can learn a lot from studying the jiva. You can begin understanding Brahman by learning about the jiva. Yes?
Sorry, this is
not
a question.
It's not a question. Ah. Okay, what is it?
There was a link that was not made between this commentary and like the review was not complete because there was one section missing between this unsaid and the previous. Like,
you mean 51?
That's why he's.
I skipped over 51.
Yeah.
I did. I thought I'd get away with it, but okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let me go back to 51.
52.1.
No. 52.1. 51 we discuss.
Yeah,
okay, let's go back to 52.1. And well, knowledge as we know it is temporary. We know certain things of the material world, and all the things we know are changing. I, you know, look at a table, brown table. Well, tomorrow, Raju could have painted it yellow, and it won't be a brown table anymore. Or maybe, you know, there's a fire and it doesn't exist anymore. So things change, and therefore the knowledge changes with the things. So how can you say, what do you mean when you talk about eternal, unchanging knowledge? What kind of knowledge could that be? And the verse of the 12th canto is given to explain that. Sarvedanta sadam yad brahma atmai katva lakshanam. The essence of all Vedantic philosophy, which specifically is knowledge of the sameness of the Supreme with the spirit soul. But that sameness, like Kaivalya, is explained. It's not absolute identicalness, but it's the being of the same spiritual quality and having an intimate relationship. Jiva doesn't exist without his relationship with the Supreme. He's always existing in relationship with the Supreme of which he's a part. So that 12th canto verse says that this is what the Bhagavad Gita is talking about. So that, you know, that begins to bring our attention to, well, we should take a look at the jiva maybe. The essence of Vedanta knowledge that Bhagavad Gita is teaching us has something to do with the jiva in relationship with the Supreme. That's 51.2.1 basically. And now we should look at the particle of the Supreme, the jiva, because he's a sample of the Supreme. In 53 that will be carried, that idea will be carried further. In 53. Let's look at 52.3 now. Tadeta jivadi lakshanamsha vishishtaya upashanidas tasishamshatvam apikochit upadishanti. In places the Upanishads teach that the Supreme has parts in terms of its being qualified by the jivas and other kinds of expansions. Well, what about all the places where the Upanishads say the opposite? The Supreme doesn't have any parts. Well, niramsha tvopa deshaka shrutis tu kevala tannishta. Shruti statements that state that the Supreme has no parts deal with kevala, the exclusive oneness of the Supreme. We can talk about the Supreme all by itself. Although it doesn't exist all by itself, we can make an abstraction in our mind. And just think about, you know, what is, apart from what it is in relationship to everything else, what is it by itself? That's knowledge of Brahman. And we call it impersonal because all those relationships are personal relationships. We can only make the Supreme seem to be impersonal by ignoring all his impersonal relationships. a human being may have so many relationships, but, you know, you can't look at him in isolation. It's not his, you could write a biography, or, you know, a psychological analysis of this person. And ignore the all the things that have to do with his relationships with everybody else. That's really a very incomplete picture of the person. You can say he's nervous, and he talks fast, and he likes to eat a lot. You can write these things down. But the full significance of all these things, it would only be found if you understand what it has to do with his relationships with the world around him and people around him. But you can ignore all that and try to make some study of the person all by himself, not in relationship to anybody or anything. And the Upanishads do that for a few reasons. One is that thinking people tend to have an impersonal prejudice. They're not favorably disposed toward accepting the personality of the Supreme. Because smart people tend to be anarchistic. They don't want to be ruled by anybody else. And if you find a person who's supreme, then you can't avoid submitting to him. If you find somebody, you find someone who's powerful, you can go take shelter of somebody else or hide away on a desert island to avoid him. You know, if you don't like the President of the United States, then go to Canada or something. But if this is a supreme person who's everywhere, even if you go to Canada, you can't avoid him, his influence, then you'll have to surrender to him or fight against him. So the impersonalists, they just try to avoid it. They just try to avoid the fact that the Supreme is a person. And the Upanishads humor their prejudice by presenting the Supreme just looking at himself, itself, without any relationship to anything. That's Kevala, the exclusive oneness of the Supreme. That aspect is there, but it's not the complete picture. The Supreme is actually never without relationships, but you can ignore the relationships and look at what's there in the middle, in the essence. And many Shruti statements, because the people who tend to be audience for the Upanishads are usually the kind of people who prefer the impersonal way of looking at things. Other people, sentimental people, who like personal relationships, that are friendly with people and talkative, you won't usually find them so much studying dry philosophy. They'll be watching soap operas on TV or doing something else. Okay, continuing. In the fourth line, I didn't mean Sanskrit. Atra kaivalyaika prayojanam iti chaturta padash cha kaivalya padasya shudatva matra vachana tvena shudatvasya cha shuddha bhakti tvena paryavasanena priti sandarbhe vyakhyasyate shri sutaha. In the fourth line of that same verse, kaivalyaika prayojanam, the word kaivalya, exclusive oneness, refers to unalloyed pureness. It doesn't refer to being the only thing that exists. And, as will be explained later in the Priti Sandarbha, this state of pureness is ultimately pure bhakti. So kaivalyaika prayojanam is actually talking about pure devotional service. Because that's where purity is, in devotional service. The verse under discussion, that 12th canto verse, was spoken by Sri Suta. Okay. As I mentioned yesterday, this verse is spoken in such a way that it tests the Mayavadis whether they've actually understood the Bhagavatam. This 12th canto. For the impersonalists, those who start studying the Bhagavatam as impersonalists, they are tested by this verse and others like it. If they haven't gone beyond their impersonal limited understanding, they're going to misinterpret this verse. And they would have failed in understanding the Bhagavatam. This would be proof. Vaishnavas will have the faith to accept the proper explanation given by our acharyas of what these words actually mean. Okay, and let's see what the commentary says. The confidential purport of the verse under discussion, Bhagavatam 12.13.12, is sometimes misunderstood by those confused by its terminology. Brahma-atmaikatmatva and Kaivalya may at first sound like references to impersonal merging into the existence of the Supreme. But to interpret Srimad Bhagavatam's view of the goal of life in such a way is to ignore everything the Bhagavatam has said in hundreds of previous chapters. We read this yesterday. The real meaning of the oneness of the Supreme and the finite souls and of the ultimate perfection of merging is found in the sublime mystery of devotional service. To reveal this mystery of bhakti to those able to understand its value is the deepest purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, indeed of the original Vedas as well. That's a radical claim, that the Bhagavatam has and the Vedas have the same purpose. A lot of people, even many Vaishnavas, will not agree with that. They see the Vedas as primarily karmakanda, promoting materialism in the name of spiritual activity. It's called yajna. Yaj means to worship. But this kind of worship is materialistic, Vedic sacrifice. Or it seems to be. Therefore, Krishna told Arjuna, Trigunya Vesheya Veda Nishtrigunyam of Arjuna. The Vedas deal with matters of the three modes of material nature. Arjuna, you should be beyond these three modes. Nishtrigunyam of Arjuna. Now that sounds like Krishna is rejecting the Vedas. And he's teaching some new philosophy that's non-Vedic. Doesn't it sound like that? Okay. Anybody not agree with my that last statement? Does anybody want to argue that Krishna isn't saying that? He isn't rejecting the Vedas? Or you agree with that he's rejecting the Vedas? Mm-hmm. Is Krishna actually rejecting the Vedas here?
Yeah.
No. Trigunya Vishaya Veda, this Trigunya Vavarjuna. What does he say about that? He doesn't say karmakanda part, he just says the Vedas. He doesn't reject, okay. What evidence does he have from the Gita that he doesn't reject?
This understanding of the
truth. Okay, but you're giving your interpretation. What does Krishna say about it in the Gita that shows that he doesn't really reject the Vedas?
What does
Krishna say anything in the Gita that shows that he doesn't reject the Vedas? Okay. Which is, Vedya, remember, we understand that also to mean not that I should be known, I have to be known, but I can be known. So that if the Vedas can give us knowledge of Krishna, that's why we reject those Vedas then, yes? What else?
What's chanda,
Rishi Bir, Bahuda Proktam, Chandobi Vividai Prata, Brahmasutra Padais Chaiva, Hetu Man Vivinishtitai. What I'm going to tell you now, this philosophy I'm going to tell you in the 13th chapter?
13th brief.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to tell you in the rest of this chapter, the 13th chapter, it's supported by a Vedic authority. He says, Rishi Bir Bahuda Gitam. It's been described in various different ways by rishis. Those are the authorities of the Vedas. Vedas personified are the rishis. who are you know, the knowers of and teachers of each different part of the Vedas. And it's presented from different points of view, Bahudha. And then Chandobi. And it's not just in their smritis or their personal books, the books they wrote, these rishis. It's right there in the Chandas. What is Chandas? Which other words? What does chandas actually mean? The word.
Chandas.
Meter. Is that all? Does it mean that it's that this, the rishis are talking in different meters? That's not what Krishna means
the
here.
Hymns, those
well, okay, chandas. Well, chanda means Vedic text. When Panini talks about chanda, he means Veda as opposed to ordinary Sanskrit. So chanda means the Vedic language or the Vedic texts. So an actual statements of the actual Vedas, Chandobi, Vivitaiprata. So Krishna is citing this as authority. You know, how could he be rejecting the Vedas? And then 13th chapter, he's, you know, it's not polite to do. You reject somebody's authority, and then three chapters later, you use his authority to support your idea. So Krishna hasn't really rejected them.
Also in 16th chapter,
yes.
He's playing the demoniac Shastra,
but Shastra could be anything. Shastra could be, you know, I'm rejecting the Vedas and I'm giving you a new Shastra, the Gita. So you can have a Shastra and still reject the Vedas, some other Shastra. No, but in this context, it doesn't. It doesn't mean anything. The sages are talking in different meters, so what? But it means... The significance is it's in the Vedas, not just some other book written by somebody. The Aparushaya, absolute authority of the Vedas. That's the idea. The real Chandas, that's the original Shastra. You know, the mother of all Shastras. Okay, and then at the end of the 16th chapter, Om Tat Sariti Nirdesho, Brahmanas Tena Vedascha. All the Vedas and the Brahmanas begin with the sacred syllables Om Tat Sat. So the Vedas are bogus. Why would he talk about that at the very end of the 16th chapter?
17.
And that means the end of, basically the end of the Gita. 18th chapter is a summary. So why is he summing up the whole philosophy of the Gita with this Om Tat Sat, which is from the Vedas? And what's important about Om Tat Sat is that the Vedas are always using those syllables. Okay. What does tat refer to? The tat padartha? What's that? The absolute truth. And the twam is you. Yeah, the jiva. Okay, so our faith is that the Bhagavatam is teaching the same view on life that the Vedas are. Scholars will never accept that. University scholars. If you want to go to the university, you better not let anybody know that you think that the Vedas are teaching the same thing as the Bhagavatam teaching the same thing as the Vedas. You'll have to pretend that you don't believe that. And if you associate with those people long enough in the universities, you'll stop believing it. We believe it, and we're not afraid to say it, that to reveal this mystery of bhakti to those able to understand its value is the deepest purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam, indeed of the original Vedas as well. Then continuing. The Upanishads teach that the Supreme is eternal, conscious, and unlimited, that he is the source of everything, and that he is the most important object of knowledge, because when his essence is known, all his emanations are easily understood. Furthermore, his self-expansion into the duality of the material atmosphere is not an imposition of illusion upon him, but an intentional expression of his personal desire. He manifests his counterparts, the jivas, to enjoy reciprocating with them. The jivatma stands in a peculiar marginal relationship to the supreme atma, the midway between the eternal world of spirit and the created world of matter. Because the jiva is an eternal living being, he is one with the Supreme in a general way. I'm sorry, I lost the sentence. As a specific individual, however, the jiva is perpetually distinct from the Supreme. Without separate individuality, there can be no true expression of love between the jivatma and the paramatma. In both the spiritual world and the material world, the Lord shares the company of his jivas. Anena jivatmananu pravishya nama rupe vyakaravani. Let me enter this world along with this jivatma and expand the manifestations of names and forms. The jiva is anena, this, the visible self, whereas the Supreme is imperceptible within material existence. One reason why the jiva is referred to by the pronoun, this is ena, this is a substitute for ayam, right? Or idam. Yeah, idam. Idam is proximate. That means we see it right in front of us. Whereas the absolute truth is tat, he's far away, we don't see him. Of course, in this statement, he's talking. The absolute truth is talking. Point is, he's not, you don't find him by himself in the spiritual world. He's visible and he's always making himself available to everybody in the spiritual world. And even in the material world, where he's invisible, he's in everybody's heart. Every living entity, each living entity, when it enters the material world, the Supreme Lord enters with him. Every body we take, every new birth we take, the Lord enters with us into that body. He's always accompanying us, even if we don't see him. So he's never, in either the spiritual or material world, never all by himself. Only in the imagination of the Mayavadis is he by himself. In the Brahman conception that's there, it's just an abstraction. It's an artificial conception of the Supreme all by itself. But the jiva, by studying his own spiritual nature, can come to learn the nature of the Supreme. Tattvamasi. You, the jiva, are the same in substance with that unknown Supreme. The Upanishadic passages that characterize Brahman as having no expansions simply focus on him in abstract, in isolation, not paying attention to his personality and counterparts. Thus, these passages do not contradict the basic teaching of bhakti. For example, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad says, Nishkalam, Nishkriyam, Shantam, Niravadyam, Niranjanam. Brahman has no parts. It is inactive, undisturbed, uncontaminated, and untouched by anything else. That does not contradict the personal viewpoint, the devotional viewpoint. It's consistent. It just has to be understood in the proper, those words have to be understood. There's no parts, no activity in the Supreme. He has no fault, no contamination. But what that means, in other words, the personality of Godhead has no material aspects. He does not engage in material karma. He is free from the agitations of material desire, and he is never degraded by contact with Maya. Throughout history, this most secret understanding of the Vedas has rarely been realized. But the Supreme Lord is exceptionally kind to the fallen souls of the modern age. He has appeared in the form of sound as Srimad Bhagavatam and directly as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By the simple disciplines of chanting the holy names of God, accepting sacred food offered to him, and studying the Bhagavatam, any human being can take up bhakti yoga and uncover his natural love of God by Lord Chaitanya's causeless mercy. Okay, I said no questions, but actually that's not the whole plan. I'm going to ask questions. Sort of test, on-the-spot test. I was thinking I'd pick on individual devotees, but that might embarrass some, so maybe I won't do that. Maybe I'll ask for hands who want to answer the questions. But I'd like to encourage everybody to try to answer. I'm going to have to try to come up with these questions on the spot. We already dealt with one. Okay, if you were asked to explain Tatvamasi in one paragraph, you know, sum it up quickly. I don't understand what that is, but, you know, you're a smart devotee. I trust you. Please tell me what Tatvamasi means, because I've heard from all these Mayavadis it means something else. What do you think it means? Kishore?
You have the same quality as the Supreme, you're spiritual.
You have the same quality as the Supreme?
Yeah, you're spiritual.
Can you explain that? How does that work grammatically? How can Tatvam say that?
You are that.
Okay.
You are spirit.
You mean that is spirit and you're also spirit?
Yes.
Okay. You have another idea?
No, I was thinking that the domestic normal is just given that just as the rays of the sun may come in the window, you say, that's the sun. But that's the straight, there's just one particle of the rays of the bigger sun. So you are that. You are.
Well, when you say that, you must be pointing at something.
Yeah.
There must be something that either you see right in front of you, or something that you were talking about previously, and you're reminding somebody about it, or you're actually pointing to it.
So just as that particle of sun has the same quality as the sun that you see, so this you that you see, has the same nature as that which is far away, the unknown supreme.
Yes.
It's like in the room, you might not see the sun. You know, the sun, that sun up there. But you see the little particles in the room. So that's the sun.
Yeah.
So that is
starting with something you do see.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you see, but the supreme you do not see. So
yes.
You are that.
Okay, now we're using you. We're pointing to you. Like, you don't know what the supreme is. Well, what are you? That's what the supreme is. So by studying the jiva, you can learn something, start to learn something about the supreme. What is it that we should learn about the jiva that's going to be relevant? This is not something that's been discussed. This is, think about it further. Okay, you're going to study the jiva, but what are you going to look at in the jiva? What are you going to find that's going to help you understand the supreme? Did you want to say? Oh, you want to go back to the previous question?
Also, this question which you're asking, we can take the spectrum as we discussed before as a compound, and then so we can say that can be extended as being Panchami Dhatri or Satami.
The word Tatvam?
Tatvam.
I don't think that grammatically Tatvam can be a samasa. It's Tatvam, you could add the suffix Twam onto Tad, but that's just a derivation of the
so
word Tatva.
It's the ending of Tat would be the middle.
No, Tat is
your Tat.
Yeah, my
answer
is
the point is that
Twam
is the
name. No, but the, yes?
Yeah,
my sense says Twam is like.
You mean the pronoun Twam?
Yeah.
You don't make compounds. You can't have a compound with a regular pronoun at the end of the compound. That you can't do it?
Yeah, no.
Well, yeah.
What he said is supi loop. I don't know what it means, but is that
supam?
Is that the?
That you can. That means you can take any noun, any well, and sup is anything with a sup ending, anything with a noun ending.
Yeah.
Noun, adjective, pronoun. And you can compound it. You can compound it with any other noun, adjective, pronoun.
No, he was not explaining it as a monster. It's just that the fact, the ending has been deleted.
He said that there's a possibility of
I don't fully understand how it could be a compound, but okay, Matsu knows better than me. Okay, but the thing is it the subject or the object or what? Because then you have verb is going to be intransitive.
Yeah.
You won't have, you eliminate the object by merging it into the subject. Now you only have one word, tattvam. Then you have a tattvam and asi. So what can asi mean?
The subject is implied, tattvam.
Oh, an implied subject.
And tattvam.
Oh, I mean you. You are tattva. I could be. Yes?
I need to answer your question.
This next question.
Yeah.
What was the question again?
What do we want? What do we need to study about?
Yeah. What's useful to know about the jiva that will help us understand the supreme?
Well, I think the jiva's different qualities as satchidananda, and ananda,
yeah,
which basically constitute that same substance.
Yes.
Share from the supreme.
Yes.
So we understand that we are eternal. We never born.
Yes.
Never created.
Yes.
And say we are. We have. Knowledge.
Again, that word knowledge in English can be misleading. Consciousness.
Consciousness.
Yeah.
And blissful consciousness. Also.
Yes.
So that when we understand those aspects, we understand something. Because jiva always moves for its happiness. Every
yes.
being moves for its happiness. In this way, we can, by logic, understand that the ananda is the nature of every jiva.
Yes.
Because we see everyone's trying to do something to enjoy.
Yes.
The same way, every jiva manifests its awareness,
yes.
and no one likes to die.
Yes.
So that's the best. So by this way, studying the nature of jiva, we can.
Yes.
And if you believe that jiva is a part of, if you accept the fact that jiva is a part of the supreme, we can infer that if this is what we inherited from.
Yes. And once you've gotten that much knowledge and understanding, all you have to do is, okay, I'm pure spirit soul, eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge and bliss. What if all the limitations were removed? And you had an unlimited such and another. That would be the absolute truth. All you have to add is understanding of the unlimitedness.
Mm-hmm. This is like the counter argument of what was said, that knowledge is temporary. But
yes.
We see the spirit soul. You can't have eternal awareness. If we study the spirit soul,
yes.
The spirit soul has eternal awareness.
Yes.
I mean, that seems what
he's
saying.
Yeah, there is a constant. Just like what you're looking at now, you may see the daylight, and at night you don't see the daylight, you just see darkness. But it's still the same you with the same awareness. Just the content of the awareness is changing. But there is a constant element of your awareness. Even in deep sleep, when the ego is not functioning, senses and ego and mind are all dysfunctional in deep sleep. But then you wake up from the deep sleep and you say, I slept very nicely, I don't remember anything. But that means that you, the witness, were conscious even in the deep sleep. How could you remember something you weren't conscious of?
In the Prabhupada often gives us an example about when you said from birth to youth to old age, you experience
yes.
all this, but you always had the same, your consciousness changed, but you always had were aware that you were a boy, you were like...
Yeah, the ego is the same.
Yeah. You feel this, you're the same person, you're a boy.
Yes. Okay, I think we'll stop after this. You can, last comment. Go ahead.
I was just saying that another thing that could be derived is that the jiva cannot exist outside its relationship with the supreme.
Without his relationship with the supreme, he can't exist.
Yeah, outside his relationship with the supreme, like all the examples.
Yes. Yes.
So from
that
one
scheme,
you can also relate to that.
The jiva
cannot exist outside its
Actually, nothing can exist outside its
yeah.
source. Like a gold ring cannot exist without gold, unless it's a fake gold ring. It's not really gold. But if it is gold, it can't exist separately from gold. But a gold ring is not aware of that fact. The relationship, inseparable relationship, doesn't require awareness of it. Gold ring's not aware of it. So I may or not be, as a conscious being, I may or not or may not be aware of my eternal relationship with the Supreme. It's still there. Being aware of it isn't necessary. Okay, I think we stop there for now. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.